Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Sub no. Stop. Drop. Shut them down. Open up shop. Oh, no. That's how rough fighters roll. Stop.
Welcome back to the Lacrosse Industry Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devin. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor at Inside Lacrosse. And today, I'm joined by Will Madrid from STX. Give everyone your actual title.
Title is Assistant Product Manager.
Okay, great. Will and I actually connected last year at the lacrosse convention. And, you know, if you've listened to this podcast before, we just talk to people that work in the industry and kind of talk about their background, how they got there, and what they're doing while they're in, you know, lacrosse. Like, how do they impact the game? So Will, we start off. Give me your background with just your relationship with lacrosse. When did it start? How did it start? And how has it developed to kind of this point at STX?
Well, Kyle, it's great to be here. I like to be in this intimate setting here with you. We're almost touching knees. It's great.
It's very close.
So I got my start really pretty late, 2001. I saw the MLL championship, and that might have been the first one, something along those lines. I'm like, what is this? This is wild. And I'm a kid growing up in Southern California, and it's baseball, it's football, it's going to the beach and surfing and hanging out with your pals, playing music, ska music. That was bigger, let alone, you know, lacrosse wasn't even on the radar at all. But this captivated my mind, and I was like, wow, I want to do that. That looks like so much fun and so different. I think around that time, American Pie came out, maybe a little after that. And, yeah, you know, the girls were really into that. So that definitely didn't hurt. I started I grabbed the stick, was fooling around. I actually went to UCLA that same year in that fall with hopes of playing golf. And,
wow.
You know, it's I loved playing it. I went there largely because I had several buddies that went there. And, you know, it was just who's who. But didn't work out. I talked to the coach who was Mike Allen, who played at Gilman School. I think he's the head coach now at UC Santa Barbara. He was at Towson for a few years. And it was awesome. You know, he gave me an opportunity, a total newbie, right? And the guys took me in. It was like a total fraternity. And it shrinks down a school that's like 40,000 plus people to just a small core of 30 to 40 there,
right?
Just looking out for each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting questions like, is that high lie? Is that rugby? Are you catching butterflies? You know, are you going out to botany? So, you know, made that switch my freshman year. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily the cool thing to do in Southern California yet. It really didn't have that status. But we were kind of underdogs a little bit on campus. And it was really fun. I just loved doing something that challenged me and that was new and different and that nobody else was really doing. And definitely nobody at my high school had played before or really even thought of it. And, you know, it's against my parents' wishes to quite a bit. They see a helmet, they're like, oh, no, you're playing football. Oh, no.
Right.
It was a big departure. And I played a little bit of street hockey when the Mighty Ducks came out. You know, I loved that. So it combined a lot of those skills that I learned out on the on the blacktop, but, you know, out on the field, and got to put on a gold helmet and run around and hit some guys and well, not hit some guys. I was really probably the one getting hit for those first few years at least. But yeah, it was really fun, great experience. People that I still talk to this day all the time. My best friends are on the team. I still talk to my coaches, like I mentioned, Mike Allen and Lane Jaffe. But they were very instrumental in. And me becoming the person I am today and how much I enjoyed the game and coaching and being a gear nut and just loving everything about it.
So how did that kind of progress into, you know, a career?
Sure. So I was pre-med. I studied marine biology. I also was doing some atmospheric engineering as well, which I didn't finish that major because I think it would have taken about 6.5 years, and I was pretty much out of funds by that point.
Right.
So I went to work for, after graduating, so I kind of stuck around a little bit, did all kinds of things throughout the team, with the team. I was, equipment manager. I picked it up right away. I loved the East Bay catalog when I was a little kid.
Yes.
And just devoured it. Like, I looked forward to every single edition. And like where we are today, you have the collection of all the Inside Lacrosse mags here.
Yep.
And they're stacked everywhere. I was the same way with the East Bay catalog. I had those things memorized. Like,
yep.
Every bit of footwear. It didn't matter if it was like a wrestling knee pad or, some football receiver glove, sports that I didn't even play. I was just like obsessed with, what made this better? Why is this new? And that was always in the back of my mind. And my mom always mentions that when I'm, when she talks to people about what I'm doing right now, she's like, oh, Willie was doing that kind of stuff since he was a little kid. I'd take him to the bathroom and read that stuff. That was my reading stuff at night. And I'm not buying all of this stuff. I'm just
right.
So interested in like what makes this stuff tick? Why is it better? And I think golfers are like adult lacrosse players in that they are just all about the gear and see which one's going to make you better and what's up with the new shaft or the new face insert. And like these are grown men until you're 80 plus years old, and it's
yeah.
just like lacrosse kids. But so where was I there? I
graduating UCLA,
yeah.
And kind of going into your first couple jobs.
Sure, yeah. So started stringing in college. I got just my world turned upside down when I think it was an assistant coach showed me, hey, Will, you're a long pole. Your pocket doesn't need to be down by the throat. You should really put it up higher. And he strung one up for me, and it was like a light turned on in my head. It was like it was night and day. No one knew how to string. We all used factory strung pockets, and it was just what you got. It was an afterthought. It really
yeah.
was. It didn't even compute that you could really customize things. You had traditional. You had monster mesh. You had 10 diamond hard mesh. But he showed me where to put this pocket, and my game just changed. It was overnight. I started stringing. Started stringing for all the guys on the team. This is probably junior senior year or so, and I just was obsessed with customizing pockets, and
yeah.
I started with 6 diamond, got into 7 diamond, real heavy into 7 diamond. But before,
really?
Before it was cool, man.
Oh.
So it was the E3 with the 7 diamond was
Dude,
like what I strung.
One
for
of
a
the
lot
hardest
of
meshes to string, though. It's really hard to string.
Right?
I remember being like, "Oh, 7 diamond, really? All right. I get it. All right, fine."
So no one was using it, and I was like, it worked easy with the head. I didn't have to skip any diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
I could tie everything down or just float them in the back, and I just made such a nice pocket. Transferred that over to then my first STX stick was, well, my first one was an Excalibur, and then it was a Profile, and I put it in that one,
oh.
and it was just awesome. And it was all about it, and then my friends that threw with it, I'm like, oh, this is way better than anything I've ever used. I'm like, okay, we're onto something here. And yeah, it grew from there. I was making sure I was ordering all the equipment for the team, just really curating everything, working with the coaching staff, just a bunch of made up roles, made up titles that look great on a resume. UCLA men's lacrosse general manager,
sure,
all kinds of all kinds of great stuff. After college, didn't go to medical school. Studied for the MCAT for about 6 months and couldn't take it anymore. I went to work for a baseball agency in Beverly Hills. Worked for such illustrious players like Tim Lincecum and Barry Bonds. Interesting people out there. But it wasn't for
wow.
me. It wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Probably could make a mint out there, but baseball was out of my blood already. I was involved with coaching. We had started to do a lot of clinics. There was a gentleman by the name of Mitch Fenton down in Southern California that founded many programs. So we went around our senior year and visited many elementary schools, got kids very excited about the game, doing small demos, shooting the ball, getting checked. Kids like, oh, I want to play that. There's nowhere to play on the west side there. West side being Santa Monica, Venice, West LA.
Yeah.
2007, might be 2006, we founded a... I didn't find any of these myself. I was instrumental in it. The West LA Lacrosse League, and we started off with like 14 boys. I carried the goals in the back of my car.
Yeah.
These weren't rage cages, unfortunately. They were real goals. So you have to unscrew them, break them down, put them in my car. Just, yeah, real sloppy. We were given the dog field. So that was the only place we could get field space, and it was in the wintertime. And if you've ever lived in Los Angeles, you get the rains every 4 or 5 years out there. January, February, March, it's just pouring rain. So we're just playing, you know, like this muddy field, you know, maybe it was half dog poop. It's hard to tell out there. But we were part of something new, and these kids were taking a chance just as much as we were. We had some ex-hockey players, some skater kids, you know, a few football players. But we had 14, 15 kids in grades K through 6. So that's a huge range, and we're trying to get this going.
Right.
We're playing in the dog park. We're, like, avoiding Rottweilers. People are asking us, you know, what the heck are we doing out there? I'm playing goalie half the time because no one wants to play goalie.
No.
So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. We'll have some fun. And, you know, you got a guy from, you know, a guy from Southern California, my roommate in college, Isaac. You know, he's from Ghana, West Africa, via Syracuse. You know, and we're the two coaches, just totally like the random guys getting this going. Mitch is from Long Island, but he's like, you guys do your thing. And our goal was to have the kids fall in love with the sport, like as much as we did, and give them a chance to experience this and just have fun and get away from the competitive baseball landscape of Southern California, the very competitive junior hockey landscape, you know, with the junior kings or football or basketball, and not get coached by a parent, but get coached by, you know, two really cool guys with Will and Isaac out there.
Right. Someone who loves it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that was from the beginning, and I saw what my coaches and Mitch brought to the game. Like, they had more passion for this game and love for it than anyone on the field. And that was just so infectious. I'm like, if I can just bring a little bit of that to these kids, you know, it's going to happen. It's really going to happen. So, you know, by then I had left the job at the agency, the office on Rodeo Drive is just a dream. I end up selling gear out of the back of my car, lacrosse gear.
Yeah.
So for a couple years, if you were a kid, elementary school or middle school that started playing lacrosse or played lacrosse in LA County, there's a good chance I delivered it to you out of the back of my car personally, just to make this happen because there wasn't a place and
right.
we couldn't get it to grow with. This gear costs $200-$250, and parents are like, what's going on? What is this? We didn't have the amount of, like, the transplants there with parents that play lacrosse. We didn't have a lot of those parents. And Dick's didn't carry it. Sports Authority didn't carry it. We definitely didn't have a specialty store. So that was a really big challenge. So I took it upon myself, joined up with a mom and pop sporting goods dealer down in Santa Monica called Kramer Sporting Goods. Heavy baseball, heavy football,
yeah.
A lot of resistance to a new sport like lacrosse. So I started doing sales there, worked there on the time, part-time, and sold Brian stuff out of the back of my car.
Yeah.
It was really wild. I got to meet a ton of people, you know, delivered anywhere out in the valley, down to, you know, into Orange County. And I'm just like this traveling vagabond with like
a delivery service of lacrosse gear?
Completely.
Well, I'm going to let you continue, but it's a perfect segue into thanking one of our sponsors who also delivers things to people, and that's Blue Apron.
Love delivery service.
And they deliver food. Now, let me tell you about Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They achieve this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. They've established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. And as a result, you know, seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with Monterey Bay Aquarium, Seafood Watch. Beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals, and produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming, which, you know, if you're into the environment, pretty important. The impact on households is that, you know, cooking together helps build strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. You know, being together with their family is great. Their featured upcoming meals for this month of November are seared chicken and roasted fall vegetables with caper butter pan sauce. shrimp and pesto fettuccine with spinach, black bean and cheese tortas with roasted broccoli and lime sour cream, and sweet pepper chicken with bok choy and rice. Man, I'm really hungry now. I like should have eaten before we did the podcast. I didn't have enough Chipotle. I'm sorry. You can get variety. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let the Blue Aprons culinary team surprise you. The way you do this, the way we can help you out with Blue Apron, you got to check out this week's menu. Get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. I had to stop you because that was a killer segue, and I had to take it. You put it up, and I just slammed it home, and that's what we had to do here.
Very nice.
Got to take pride in the ad reads.
Now we're both very hungry.
That's true, but we have water, and in a confined space, we'll figure it out. So where we left off, you're a vagabond selling things out of your car. Where do we go from there? What's the next step?
Caper butter sauce? That's still on my head.
Okay. I don't know what it is. It sounds good. I want some. Fair enough.
So, yeah, we're selling stuff. Me, fitting up kids. And it's growing. Like, the next year, we have a few hundred. We keep pushing along. I stick around. Great model. You know, it's all high school. Some high school, college players get a chance to supplement their income.
Right.
We had players from USC, LMU, Claremont, UCLA, all coaching these teams, and these other kids in other areas are able to have the same experience that is so unique to lacrosse, because again, they have a young, a young passionate person teaching them the game. Lots of times we'd have an inexperienced parent be the assistant coach, so they could learn and handle a lot of the logistics for the team. And what was really great is we all had to ref. We didn't have the funds.
That doesn't sound great to me at all.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
Right? You have respect for the ref right away because you're going to talk to him after the game or something. And so you learn an appreciation for what these guys are going through as well. So it's really full circle. And it was great. It was a little league type model. If a player didn't have funds, they could play. Mitch made certain that everyone could play. It was amazing. We had gear for everyone. It's really a family. We hung around there for a long time, and I still talk to a lot of those people to this day because it was such a us versus everybody else. We were still a winter league, so we were playing part of December into February so we wouldn't conflict with baseball and lose a lot of those kids. It was a really exciting time. We were part of something exciting. I think about it a lot. I'm like, man, I can't believe we actually did some of this stuff and carrying, the goal, like I said, goals around. And well, it was fun. It was fun. And bringing kids from all those colleges together. So ultimately, the mom and pop, it's not lacrosse specialty.
Right.
I needed to bring in the other brands, STX and others. Something that I couldn't do. They're like, all right, who's this guy, Will? How long is he going to be around? I didn't get it at the time. Why I didn't have access to some of these manufacturers. I get it now, being on the other side.
Right.
The credit worthiness, the just the risks on both sides that you're able to take. But ended up moving to a company called Southswell Sports.
Oh, okay.
And they later became Adrenaline.
Right.
And I did outside sales for them for a while. Now I had access to all the brands. I had made a lot of great connections in the lacrosse world on the West Coast, and start selling stuff out of the now out of my home. They didn't have to go so much door to door. I still did a little bit. I used to go raid the store down in Newport Beach. Poor Joel would be like, "Will's here again." I take half of his store, go sell it up in LA, come back a week later. "Will, you can't keep doing this. You can't do this."
Yeah.
No, I'm taking it. I'm selling. Sales solves everything. Yep. It's all right. It was a fun time for that. Again, delivery service now with all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
Just learning, am I cut out for this kind of thing? And it was nothing I really anticipated getting into the gear, but I loved it. I really loved it. And it was almost second nature to me, just knowing all the differences and being able to explain that to people in a efficient and friendly manner, I think was very important and key to my success there. Ultimately, we opened up a Southwell store in El Segundo, right by the airport. We named it The Gundo. And gosh, I forgot exactly what year that was, but we opened it right next to some fields down there. And it was fantastic. I was like the local bartender of the lacrosse world, because we get the coaches, the parents, they come in there, spill the beans, talk about each other. I just smile and nod.
Yep.
Me and my assistant manager, Johnny, we just jam out to our Taylor Swift and string a lot of sticks, man. A lot of sticks. So it was really fun. People would come, that was what everyone came in there for the experience, to have a fun experience with us and what we're doing. That's why I learned how to string traditional, getting into goalie stuff beyond Seven Diamond. And that was still like right in the days of when we still had hard mesh.
Right.
The latex paint coated nylon that you had to break in, that you had to boil. And, you know, it was really a service.
Shower with it.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Take in the shower, put some
shampoo on it.
Shampoo.
Yep.
Yeah. And like people look at me super funny and like, what's going on? But you learn by doing it. And, you know, I've heard some other guys talk on your show. And yeah, we would have a backlog of 50, 60 sticks. I'd come in there on a Monday and my desk is just covered with sticks.
Yep.
And it's a, please, Will only can do this one. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
In addition
to running the whole store. But it was a great experience there. You know, really taught me a lot about business, a lot about talking to people, talking to, you know, all kinds of people in the industry. In LA, you meet all kinds of weird, wacky people in the industry, sports, celebrities. I meet teams from all over the world stopping by just through LAX. If they had a hour, 2 hour layover, I'd see so many national teams or people visiting from Asia, from Africa, from Europe. They'd pop in and they'd come in and buy like $2,500 worth of gear at a time. And it was wonderful. It was just a melting pot of just lacrosse nerds hanging out. And
great.
We were really a hub there. And that was a really good time.
How did that turn into STX?
So STX, again, we're going back to my old coach in college, Lane Jaffe. He forwarded me a wanted ad, and it was given to our slip of paper, really. And he's like, you know, STX is looking for someone out here in Northern California. And, you know, this is not really for me. I don't think I can, add or call people back. And yeah, I get it, Lane. But he shows it like, oh man, maybe this is an opportunity. I've always wanted to keep challenging myself, get closer to the source,
right,
so to speak. I really liked what I was doing with Southwell, but I just wanted more. I wanted more experience. I love the retail store, the setting, the customers. My managers there were great. Noah and Patrick.
Noah Fink?
Yep. Noah
That's
Fink.
My dude.
Again, met common denominator here is just the really good people I've met in the sport. They're so passionate about it. They'll bend over backwards and do anything to keep it going and to make sure people have a good experience. So I reached out. I'm like, all right, take a look. I had a lot of friends in the Bay Area. Of course, a lot of the people that played at UCLA were from the Bay Area, not from LA. So I had a lot of friends there already. And you know, it was a very exciting day and a very sad day when I had to, tell the guys there goodbye, that I have something new, a new challenge. It was really hard leaving Southern California, where I grew up, friends and family.
Right.
Met my wife there in Santa Monica. But it was the right move. Getting closer to the source, there's an itch there that I got a scratch, and ended up moving to San Francisco and later Oakland, working as a territory manager for STX. And it's a lot more than just sales. You know, we're going to like a brand ambassador type events, talking with schools, placing prototypes throughout the West. And it was a fun experience. It was really great. I was able to see people, players, stores, in Oregon, in Washington, Idaho, in Montana, in Utah, in places that there's maybe 150 players, and just meeting all these different stories was just wonderful. And the differences everywhere just opened up a whole world for me, and it's very exciting.
Right.
Especially that first year when you're just talking to everyone for the first time, and they're like giving you a weird eye because, like, oh man, I know you. You're the competitor. Still working for those guys? Are you a spy? So
yeah.
it took a little while winning some guys over, checking my socks. Are you wearing adrenaline socks, Will? No, man. I know better than that.
Yeah.
Come on. So
wear Nike now.
I can wear some Nike socks. And yeah, just the differences between a player in Spokane and Seattle are just are like light years apart, and the way they string and the way they play the game in Boise versus Missoula is fantastic, and seeing these little seeds growing everywhere and meeting all these passionate people, you've probably experienced this.
Right.
It's just part of the fraternity. You don't have a secret handshake, but you played lacrosse? You know what's going on. You know what's up. There's just something to us. There's just not a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
Still that play the game. It's just such a great bond. So territory grew. Went out to Utah. Got a little bit in Colorado. Visiting some accounts in Minnesota as well. It's an exhausting life. It's very fun, but the inside of a Holiday Inn is the same.
Same everywhere. That's the one thing that stays the same.
Right? Same
for
as
sure.
St. Paul or Logan, Utah. And I had an opportunity to come to Baltimore, where I had come for a sales meeting several times and experienced the Inner Harbor in its full glory, so to speak. And, yeah, just had a phenomenal opportunity to come join the crew here over on Bush Street in Pigtown. And that was early 2016, January 2016,
yep.
And get closer to what I've always wanted to do and get on the product management side.
So what was that experience like coming from a place that's growing to one that is you're moving from a cold bed to a hotbed, I guess, is the analogy. The hotbed of lacrosse is Baltimore, and STX is kind of at the center of that. What was that experience like for you as someone that I just picked this up, but I love this. I'm going to dedicate myself to this. And now I'm surrounded by people that are like that. What was that experience like?
So it's definitely, you go from being a big fish in a little pond, so to speak. We just knew everyone. I wasn't saying I was the man over there or anything. I just knew everyone
right.
in the community, even if they weren't doing business with me or it wasn't even about that. We just knew each other. And a lot of it was through coaching. I gained my authenticity through coaching. I think I'm still helping out here in Pigtown and helped start the Oakland lacrosse program with Kevin Kelly over there, who's great. And again, just getting the program off the ground over in the East Bay there to a place that is just – it's saturated. Lacrosse is in the DNA
yeah.
Of Baltimore, of Maryland, and everyone you meet has played at some junction in their life. It's just in the culture. It's so deep. It's in the roots. It's not even grassroots here. It's deep. It's a old growth forest, you could say.
Yeah.
You don't need to lay any framework. So that was very exciting going to my first Division I game at not first Division I, but first game at Homewood. Was just awesome, and seeing that many people at a lacrosse game was just so exciting. It's like, oh man, this is a place that just lives and breathes lacrosse, and like the roar of the crowd, and what's the Hopkins band, the whole deal that we've seen on TV
yep.
for a while out in California, and you're like, it just seems so far away. And it was like it was here, and it was really fun to be part of that, and it's also daunting, intimidating. You question yourself, like, hey man, I'm a guy, I played MCLA ball at UCLA, like, yeah, I've been coaching at various levels, but it's intimidating to see these people that have been playing since they were in the crib,
yeah.
So to speak, and regaining my confidence talking to a host of people that have just been doing lacrosse for generations.
Yeah.
a new challenge.
I mean, you talked about the source. I don't think you get closer to the source than Baltimore. For a lot of people, I mean, I've had my fair share of, oh, Baltimore, kind of talks. But, you know, we're here now and we're talking about it. So why don't you tell me a little bit about, and the listeners, a little bit about how, like, your job works. What are you in charge of? What do you do? And how has it evolved since you took the job?
Sure. So as a product manager, especially specializing in the men's game, there's three of us. There's my boss, Patrick Gowan, who we worked together at Southwell. We both came over. And Spencer works on a lot of the padding. I focus a lot on heads, handles, mesh, field equipment, fiddlesticks, bags, end caps, all kinds of good stuff. So overseeing, you know, several hundred, maybe 1,000 SKUs when you count all those colors, and making sure that this product, we have timelines and plans for everything going out, 5-10 year plans, making sure it arrives on time, on cost, and on spec. So take it from its birth all the way to when, all the way into the stores. I still go to stores. I still do some, little educational seminars. I was speaking to the Lacrosse Unlimited Managers Convention last week. So it's still our responsibility after we sell it in to the stores to help them sell through our product and to talk about our product and be passionate about our product. So that's a lot of what I do. I can't get into specifics. I think you got some questions.
I think kind of the analogy there is like you're birthing these things and carrying them through to their maturation to the public's hands.
Yeah.
So what is that timeline like? Like you, all right, we're making a new attack head or attack centric push forward head. How does that start? What is your role in helping to start that, push that, deal with how the stringing holes go, the geometry? Like, how does that start versus how does that finish? Like,
sure.
How long is that?
Sure. Yeah. And I had like this idea in my head of what was going on and how long these things take. And, you know, it couldn't have been further from what I was thinking about before. Like, until you're really there, it's hard to put all the pieces together.
Right.
There's definitely a learning curve. You know, I'm like, I'm coming in here, this guy from California. Oh, I'm going to show these guys what's going on. But, the guys at STX definitely have a good process down. So it takes years. It's a several year process to bring something to market. Now some things can be fast tracked a little bit, but that's, what we're looking at generally speaking. And we always go back to the player. You know, we have to love our customer. I like to love our customer more than our product, more than our service. Because that's who's given us these ideas. That's who we're trying to empower. And so I'm out in the field. So for the conception of a product, try to solve a problem. I'm out there in the summertime, in the fall. So what's not working? Hey, I'm not a sales guy. You don't have to, BS me. Like, tell me what you don't like about our product. That helps me a lot more than what you do like. I want to know, is it warping too much? Is the scoop working properly for you? Can it be more flexible? Can it be stiffer in certain areas? And try to just distill that into, one to three main problems or issues that we're trying to solve for a specific product and make these fit into our commercialization timelines. That's an ideal world. And we're always doing some advanced concept testing. So, like, take our new marble head. Stallions, for example.
Sure.
Like, so that's an advanced concept that we're working on and we're still working on. That wasn't the end goal, but that was like, oh wow, look what we got out of this. Like, this is really cool. Can we do something with this? Can we commercialize something in the meantime with this type of product? And yeah, but we got to test it first.
Right.
We absolutely got to test it first. Those were out in the field in California, all over the East Coast, for over a year before we release them. So it might be new in the public's eye, but we've had those out for a while. So I kind of got on a little segue there just to plug those Stallion
marbles. No, that's fine. That's cool.
Stallion 700.
Stallion 700 marble available now. Unstrung for you. What's the MSRP?
It is at $90.
All right. So same as the regular.
Same as the regular.
All right.
Yeah.
Now you're here to hear. You got to go pick one up. So give me an example of a head that you worked on that you're really proud of.
Sure. Oh, gosh. So I'm getting a lot of them still halfway. I've been here in Baltimore almost 2 years. So haven't really taken one all the way through a full timeline.
Right.
So that gives you an idea of what's going on without me saying it.
I mean, it's kind of – so that's why I want – no. So that's why I want you on the podcast, right? So a lot of people that listen to this are gearheads and lacrosse. They think that – this is the crazy thing. They think that companies just take this because this company did this and they reverse engineered this and this is why this happened. And I'm here to tell you, and Will's here to tell you too, even if he's not going to say it on record. That's not how it works, man. That's not how it works. There's a lot of – work that goes into the product before you see it. And it isn't 2 months or 3 months or one tweak or one fix. It's dozens and dozens of things that go through a machine and a system before it goes into your hand. So it's okay for you not to like something because maybe that particular head isn't for you, but every company tries to give you what they think you want, right? And that's kind of the difference with everybody, and obviously the longstanding kind of framework of STX, you know, they've had a lot of success with head design. They've pushed head design to different parts and into the modern thing. And the last kind of wave of heads that you guys have put out are different. They're not just retreads. They're not just remakes. They might have a similar name, like the Surgeon 500 to the 700. You can't tell me that's the same head. You know, there's completely different concepts applied to that. So I just wanted to have you on to kind of,
sure,
you know, let people know that it's not just this versus this versus this. It's people are trying to service you, but also at the same time, give you something that maybe improves your game that you haven't even thought of before.
Sure.
And so my revised question to you is pick one thing that you've worked on that's out there now, because I know you've worked on stuff that's out now. A little bit, at least, that you helped with that you're proud of.
Sure.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
You think you know? Oh, man.
I do. But go ahead.
Can I buy a vowel?
You know. I mean, I know you're a defensive guy.
Yeah.
So.
Help me.
No, I mean, okay. So you're a string guy and yeah. You went through, and one of the things that one of the products you guys have brought out that has a different way to kind of look at stringing, or at least that has been in the market, is the 700 and the
sure.
side rail.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The side rail and the channel lock.
Yeah.
Which are two things that I'm pretty sure you had a hand in at least tried or tested and pushed. So kind of tell me and the listeners a little bit about that process. How far into that do you, you know, dip your hand in?
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of that stuff, and we have all these different prototypes that never see the light of day,
right,
so to speak. And we're just working a lot of these in parallel. We take these ideas to our designers. So we give them these problems, or areas that we need to improve upon. And these designers are very talented, individuals that, you know, that take their inspiration from aerospace, from race cars, all kinds of stuff, and able to create these works of art. Because that's what I really think they are, to take from, you know, these player needs and to shape them into something that you can see. I think it's just there's some magic there, and it's great. And so a lot of the exploration is we look forward and we also look back into our archive, because our founder, Richard Tucker Sr., he still roams the halls mostly around 4 o'clock on Fridays. But he roams the halls, but he is a wealth of knowledge. So he had the first injected molded plastic head, aluminum handle, mesh, the insert on a putter face. That's him, and he's got all these ideas. And there's a lot in the vault. So we've taken that throat design that was out before. It was out with the Canon. There might have been a one before that I'm forgetting. But and then there was the hype that also had a suspended rail. But these were things kind of before their time, before stringing became, you know, what it is now. And a lot of it's just like, all right, how can we give players options? We don't want to pigeonhole them into a certain pattern or a certain head that this is one size fits all. We're getting a little bit more experimental. And you're going to see a lot of that in 2019 that I'm really excited about. But just giving players more options. Like, what can we do with this? What is this throw good for? Oh, man, face-off guys like to put their hand up higher. Attackmen like to put their hand up higher. Let's use this shortened throat design. Oh, and it also gets rid of head rattle. Wow, you just don't know until you try it out and you take it to the field. So giving them these options, giving them sources of inspiration of what can work is very instrumental to my job. I am the eyes, the ears, the mouth of the player, of the guys, you know, at UNC, at Duke, Ohio State, Syracuse. I have to distill that and present it to the designers, to the engineers in a language that they can understand. They speak a different language.
Right. Totally, engineers.
Totally,
yes.
Totally different.
They're cat people and everyone else are dog people. No, that's the analogy. No, I got you. Engineers are a different breed altogether.
They like to destroy my projects.
Yeah. Well, this is how this won't work. Yeah, exactly. I totally understand what you're saying. So here's the dreaded moment where you could just say no comment, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What are you working on that you're excited about that you can tell me about?
Man,
gotta be something.
Yeah, there is. There's a few great things out there right now. And we're testing them with our partner schools. I'm on the road every week right now. Probably have thousands of prototypes out in the field. Don't take any pictures.
Instagram.
No. but that's the only way to find out what's working. We have something that I think shooters are really going to love coming down the pipeline real soon. We have stuff that... Gosh, it's hard to say something specific because we have stuff at every position.
You don't have to
coming.
Be super specific. Something, just like, this is what we're working on for this position.
There's something, yeah.
Something for everybody.
You know, I think we can improve, and we're going to improve the experience for the FOGO. We're going to improve the experience for the midfielder. For a defenseman, it's coming there. And like, these are all projects that we're working on simultaneously. Sometimes it's overwhelming, and I'm doing mesh at the same time. But we're trying to change. We have to think outside the box with a lot of these things. And like I said, a lot of the prototypes that we work on just don't make it to market. They're too weird. It might not sell, but we want, you know, 10% of those players that pick up our gear to love it, to really love it. And to be, you know, our evangelists out there to talk about our gear. And we built it for those people that get it, that figured out the niche that this stuff fits into. Like the Surgeon 700, like you going back to that one, that one's chock full of weird ideas. The suspension rail, the screws in the front of the head, Enduroform that we use. I mean, it's a huge part of what we do with our material scientists in the lab. And we kind of put that all together. And it's kind of a Frankenstein thing that, all right, it works, but we're probably going to see a lot of those innovations that we brought out with that head come down the line and really improve the play all over the field. But I think it's just like we've learned, you know, kids like, oh, more stringing holes, heads are blown, wow. Little things like that, but just players want more options. They want to be part of that experience. I think... people my age and younger are really curious about the experience that they're given either via YouTube persona to, you know, being able to go to a shop and have the local guy string it for you, or you string it yourself.
Yeah.
That's all part of the experience. And lacrosse is very unique that you can customize your weapon of choice, and giving people more options, things to do, things to customize. I think that's really, you know, paramount of where we're pushing things right now.
So one piece of advice that you could give to anyone looking to work in the lacrosse industry, like they're just graduating college this year.
Sure.
They're trying to break in. What would you tell them to do?
I would tell them to study engineering, or design. If you really like that, a great designer, a great lacrosse specific engineer, I think is very hard to find.
Yeah.
You know, we're very lucky to have some people that have been in the sport a long time that are also talented designers, that are also talented engineers, and get it and know what unique stresses or unique conditions a head and handle are put through. I think it gives them an insight that and that's not to say, you know, we don't look at people outside the industries. It's important not to close ourselves in.
Right.
Right. We look at other industries all the time, golf, climbing, outdoor, footwear, to find areas of inspiration. So we do take people from the outside, but you know, lacrosse guys are and girls are, we're kind of a different breed. You know, I don't know if everyone can hang out with the lacrosse player too long. There's a lot of, a lot of weird stuff that happens, but, I would tell them to study those disciplines. Are it's going to give you a lot of options. And go work in a store. Go into outside sales in a commission-only job and see if that really is what you want to do. If you want to be in this industry, you know, we're not retiring early in this industry. It's not that kind of industry at
right.
all. It's a lot of people driven by passion, by what they do, and how they affect people in a sport that's been so special to all of us. And we feel very there's a lot of tradition in the game, and we feel a lot of respect for the people that that come before us and carry on that that tradition lacrosse has laid out there. So get into the business. You can get into it in high school.
Yep.
We're seeing a lot of guys doing this, you know, via their Instagram stringing and their companies, and learning about cash flow and margins and
inventory
yeah, control.
Things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, things like that. And go work for a store. Go, you know, if you're in high school, go intern for a store. Go work some camps and learn like what's not working for the players out there. But get involved with the industry. A lot of us came from retail. We have that experience. We know the challenges at retail, and it really helps because that's our first customer, right? The retailer is really our customer, and ultimately the player is the end user using our product. But if you understand our customer, the retailer, and the that can only benefit you, and that'll benefit you a lot when you get to a manufacturer, because you understand their needs. Again, goes back, I think you gotta love your customer.
Absolutely. All right. Anything to plug? Instagram, Twitter? I mean, we already plugged your head. We already plugged the Marble Stallion head. So anything else?
You know, you can find me at I'm at Will Madrid on pretty much all the handles out there. I got some funny stuff. I tried to put a little insight into the day to day. You might get me on the golf course or hunting for mushrooms in the Patapsco State Park or testing the gear.
Nice.
These are edible mushrooms, Kyle.
Okay. Great. I'm like, what? Patapsco's like around the corner. I'm not from here.
It's
I don't know.
UMBC.
I don't know what that is. But hey, give him a follow. Thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate the insight. Guys, the bottom line, you got to have passion for this. And if you don't, you're not going to last. He's too nice to say it. I'm not very nice. I'm just going to tell you what's up. So thanks for coming in to the Lacrosse Industry Podcast. We will catch you next time. Sub no.